Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to the Get a Grip podcast. First one of 2023. Not going to say Happy New Year. I had somebody tell me that today on the 12th of January. And I don't want to get too in the weeds on my thoughts on Happy New Year, but don't need it on the 12th. Think I'm good. Had 11 days to process the calendar change. I've already written it down a couple times in places, so I'm good. But if nobody said it to you recently, I hope you have an awesome 2023. I've got a fun podcast to start the year with. Marina Alex, one of my favorite people in professional golf and a winner on the LPGA last season, joined to just chat about her year and just kind of a whole bunch of random stuff, Twitter and DoorDash and a whole bunch of different things. So I think you're going to enjoy that. And then on the back end of this, my buddy, my best friend, the man, the myth, Rusty Reynolds, jumps on the podcast to just go over my big golf trip of the year. 16 buddies, early January. We start the year off the right way on vacation, and we go on a golf trip to Southern Arizona. And I made Rusty jump on to just kind of discuss the reason we love the trip so much and why it's a lot of ours favorite trip of the year, and told a couple stories from it. And listen, I did it mostly so you guys could listen to Rusty Reynolds. That's the main reason that this was a part of the podcast. So I think you're going to enjoy that. Like I said, Marina Alex to start, Rusty on the back end. If you have not purchased The Golfer's Zoo, the children's golf book I wrote, do that in 2023. That is your new resolution. You're going to buy The Golfer's Zoo for yourself or someone you know that's having a child soon. You can go to back9press.com/bacon and order a copy. I appreciate the support and thank you all so much for that. And these parts are going to get a bit busier. You're going to see more episodes here at the Get a Grip podcast and more guests, different guests, and some recap shows after some of the big Sunday events. So keep the feed rocking, and I think you're going to enjoy what we have coming your way in 2023. And I'll have some other announcements in and around some work stuff over the next few weeks and next few months. For now, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Have a great weekend, and we will be back next week.
Okay.
You have to say you're allowing that to be a thing.
Got it. Okay.
So did you? It's recording. Way to go. See, there you go.
Okay.
We did it. We did it right. That's Marina Alex, by the way. This is the most informal introduction to the podcast ever. 40th ranked golfer in the world. So there's not really rankings in anything else except for individual sports. Like the NFL ranks teams, but I mean, yeah. It's not really till the end of the season, right? Till we say you were the best team. Is it ever weird to think that of the billions of people on earth, you're the 40th best at something?
I know it is. It is a very weird thing. And then I think as golfers and, you know, competitive athletes, you're constantly like, oh, is 40th, you know, that good? Because you're like, oh, I want to be number one in the world. Like those are your professional goals. And like, that's what you're working towards. So when your ranking drops, and at one point last year, you know, it was probably in somewhere in the 60s. And I was just like, oh, this is so disappointing. But then when you say it like that, it's like, no, you're still like one of the best golfers on planet Earth.
You have a number. I mean, there is literally a number assigned to you to tell you how good you are at this game. I wrote down that you're golf Twitter's ombudsman, and then I said maybe ombudswoman. I feel like anytime you respond to something from a big brand, it's typically pointing things out. Do you feel like that's a part of your kind of golf legacy, is making sure accounts are remembering the women's side?
Yeah. And sometimes I get a little fired up about certain things, but I feel like, and I hate to be that, oh, here she goes again, like complaining about something, but I do think there is some merit sometimes to the tweets that I throw out there. I try not to tweet unless I really feel like it has some value to it. Like it's going to draw attention to something, and it may not always necessarily be positive feedback or positive attention. I just think sometimes, you know, pointing out some of the inconsistencies, you know, on both sides of the game, you know, if it can help educate someone into knowing something a little bit differently, then I've done my job, even though I probably get a ton of hate for it, but it's okay.
What do you think your percentage of hit send or publish versus percentage of delete tweet Like,
how many deleted? Sometimes I'll stew on one and I'll go back to it.
Save drafts.
Like, no. That's not going to get sent.
I would love it. That would be a great project to uncover the save draft tweets under famous people's Twitter accounts.
Yeah, as long as we have no cancellations of these people based on what they might or may not have tweeted. Like, it's a fine line because next thing you know, you say something wrong and people are out for blood.
You are out. I have a very easy first question for you.
Sure.
What do male media members like myself continue to get wrong? What do we get wrong on a consistent basis, in your opinion?
I think in some ways, just the skill sets are a little, I feel like they're misrepresented. You know, the men's game is grossly long. I mean, these guys hit it so far. And I just think what most people don't understand, unless they're watching women's golf consistently, and as you watch it more, you start to understand, we just don't hit it very far relative to the length of course that we play. So there's a lot more longer clubs into holes that I think if you were to take an average PGA Tour and an average LPGA Tour player, what clubs are you hitting into a green? Ours are probably a lot longer clubs. And I think that there's a lot of there should be more credit where credit is due and how well these women play from these distances. And I just think that's like something that most fans, unless you pay attention, they just don't know that.
I was caddying for my friend Irene years ago, like in Arkansas. And I remember who a comedian was, but he like came out on the range and every player kind of turned their attention to the comedian. Might've been George Lopez.
Okay.
And everybody kind of paid attention to George Lopez. And I'm in my mid to late 20s. And the other side of the range was this young girl. It was Lexi. I didn't know who it was at the time. But I remember watching her. She was hitting three irons. And she's hitting these like sky-high drawing three irons. And I remember just being beside myself at how incredible it was and how piercing they were and how far they were going. And as I spent time kind of caddying and being around the LPGA, to your point, I was shocked at how many times it'd be a par three and it'd be like a six iron or a seven iron, not a wedge, or how many approach shots it's an eight iron and not a wedge. And to your point, if you're one of the longer players on the PGA Tour, I mean, you're probably hitting six or seven wedges a day in a tournament round.
And you're reaching every par five in two, you know, and a lot of our setups, unless you are like Lexi and in that, like, I would say 5% of total driving and all that, you're probably not. And even then your driver three would, you know, it's never like, I never sit on a par five and like, oh, I'm going to hit seven iron in today. Like,
right.
So stoked for that. It's like, no, I'm going to hit driver three wood and then seven iron.
Yeah. I'll hit the seven iron third. It'll be the third swing. How would you describe 22? I mean, you obviously got your second PGA Tour win.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seemed like a really kind of big year. It seemed like a bit of a coming out party for you.
Yeah. You know, and I've explained this a little bit, the COVID year was like weird for everyone. And then I kind of was like, it doubled back with a bit of an injury setback. So I kind of got into like spring of 21 and I hadn't really played much competitive golf in pretty much a year. I think I, from 2020 to March, I think I'd played like six tournaments, which is wild.
Crazy.
Like looking at my total life of like how many golf tournaments I played, that it was just really bizarre. So it took a while to get back into the competitive flow of things. And then I ended up linking up with Claude Harmon and we were changing some stuff in my swing. So it was like kind of like a lot of things happening in 21. And I played okay, but it was just, there were, you know, changes and getting back to being comfortable playing, you know, many weeks in a row, stuff like that. So I think 22 is just a product of like all the things that happened in 21 that they're not glamorous, but it kind of helps you kind of move along and get to that next phase and step of your career. And I'm hoping there's some more to build on that, you know, even going into this year.
You know, age is such a weird thing. Like I turned 39 late last year and I've finally gotten to the point where I'm not the young person doing golf broadcasting.
Now.
And I was reading a lot of your quotes about the win and you really talked a lot about your age and feeling old. And I looked it up. I mean, you're 32 years old, but in terms of the LPGA, 32.
It's the back end of a career.
It would, for a lot of players. What is it like being a 30-year-old on the LPGA Tour?
It's different. It's kind of cool. I mean, like, there's so many young players out there. So it kind of keeps you, like, mentally, spiritually young. You know, you're like, oh, like, what are the cool things that, like, all the 20-year-olds are into now? And, like, TikTok and, like, all this stuff. And I'm just like, what is this?
Can you show me how to do this on my phone?
So, like, mentally, I feel like I'm not really 32 in that regard, but you know, the day to day and the working out and the practice and the travel and like all that physical that goes into week in, week out, like your body starts to catch up with you and you play tricks with yourself. I still think sometimes I'm like in my, you know, early to like mid 20s and I can just like go hard, you know, like whether that's like take a trip, see my friends, go have a great time, like pack up a suitcase, travel to a tournament, like don't sleep that much, like all those things that like I can't really do as much anymore. I have to really kind of figure out a better schedule. I think I played like 23 or 4 events last year, which is crazy. I need to
too many?
Do better. Too many. Yeah. Okay. I had a great time at all of them, but I got done. And I was like, wow, I am really wrecked.
That is. It's interesting because I think so many golf people, and this kind of goes back to our initial talk about the way we talk about golf and so much of it is PGA Tour bias. Mm. And I feel like we forget so much about the LPGA is this like yearning for an off season. And I feel like the LPGA players get a bit of an off season. Do you feel like you step away from the game?
Yeah, I do. Like last year, I definitely had an off season. I mean, getting to play Hilton next week, our tournament of champions, you know, that's amazing. And so it kind of cut the off season, but it also didn't really, cause we have a bit of a break until we restart again. So I've kind of almost taken two little off seasons,
gotcha.
You know, I try and I want to play well next week. And I've kind of made that mistake where I'm like, okay, let me take a ton of time off and rest and recharge. But I'm not like, I don't come out guns hot. Usually it takes me like a few weeks to get back into the competitive flow of things. And I'm like, wow, I'm really rusty. And I felt like, you know, this year it's a great opportunity. Let's try to be a little bit more to the best that I can be like competitively ready to play as opposed to using it like as a tune-up event, because there's nothing backed into this week. It's just this week and then we have a month off. So I'm like, let me gear up and like get ready and see what can happen. And then I'll shut it down again for a little bit.
What does that look like? Is that playing mini tour events? Is that, I mean, what are you doing to stay sharp in terms of tournament ready?
I did a lot of random things. You know, I played the Australian Open at the very end of the season last year. So it kind of pushed me into finishing, you know, at the beginning of December, which I hadn't done in a really long time, which I think was good. And then I just kind of got right back into it, you know, working with Claude. I played a couple pro members down in South Florida where I live. I played with Claude and the Floridian pro member. And then I played it was not as to be expected.
Okay, no trophy. No trophy. I got you.
I actually played a Palm Beach par 3 mini tour team event with Allison Walsh, which was hilarious.
Nice. So Walsh, yes. She still got game?
Yeah, still got game.
Okay, good.
And then just a couple like random pro-ams, just like something to keep, you know, the club in my hand and at least have some little bit of level of expectation for a golf game. I just think it's just good to like keep it in like a close range of, you know, not getting too far away from practicing and playing and all that. Take a few days off here and there, but
I think the interesting thing about pro golfers is everybody assumes you guys just spend like 6 hours on the range every day.
No,
and
not anymore.
Yeah, it's very strange that the more you like either become friendly with a pro golfer or know a little bit about their lives, that's really not how you prep.
No, I would say there are probably some players out there that are just addicted to that grind and they will beat, you know, 500 golf balls a day because bless their hearts, they can. Like, right. That's wonderful. But majority of pros, once they get past, I would say, like the 5-year mark of their career, they're not doing that. It's a lot of wasted energy when you could be doing so many other things. The swing is not, you know, changing all that much. And I like to believe as we get older, we have a better sense of like how to do it, you know?
Agreed.
So I think that the changes take a little bit less time to make. If you're doing them efficiently in the right way, I think you can make them stick faster. As opposed to when you're, you know, like 12, 13, 14, there's so much to learn and you have like so much kinks to work out. It takes, you know, those hours on the range to get better.
What is better about your golf game now than when you first started playing professional golf? And you can't say everything, by the way. You have to actually pick something.
I do think like through where I started, you know, my first like long-term coach on tour was Ian Triggs out in Australia. And, you know, I made a lot of changes with him and then I've made even more changes with Claude. I just think I've become so much more consistent as a ball striker. I think those first few years, I depended a lot on my short game, you know, scrambling up and down, like needing lights out putting weeks to just like top 10, stuff like that. I never could string together 4 really like quality days where it wasn't like, I didn't feel like it was like a speed highlight reel of like just making bombs from everywhere and like chipping it like out of no man's land, you know, like he is just a magician like that. And it's super cool to watch, but it's exhausting to do that, you know, week in and week out. So I think being able to hit more greens and fairways, it just has afforded me better results.
Also, at times exhausting to watch Jordan Spieth play golf. Like even it's just, even if you're on your couch, sometimes you're like, how are you, what is the score here?
My anxiety levels go with him. I'm like watching him and I'm like, this is like stressing me out.
Are you a golf watcher? Like, I mean, I know you're a sports freak, but
yeah, I love sports, but like golf and NFL are like my things. You know, so I don't pay a ton of attention to golf in the fall. But once the NFL season's over, that's like my Sunday is golf day. So it just kind of gets supplemented one for the other, but
yeah,
no, I'm a big time golf nerd.
So when you're a golf nerd, when you meet these golf people, when you go to these, you know, it's a pro-am or like you said, it's a pro member. I mean, how are you able to kind of keep the nerdiness down to where the person knows you're not freaking out?
Don't talk to them because I'm too awkward.
Just say nothing. Yeah. You say nothing.
I just don't say anything. Yeah.
Have you walked by a famous golfer before and said nothing? Is there somebody you could? Okay. So, I mean, a lot of them.
Yeah, probably. I'm just like, whatever. I'm not going to talk to them unless they talk to me.
Are you like that with LPGA players? Have you had a moment
that?
Okay.
No,
not at all.
No, no,
not at all.
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
I'm just so not like in that world, you know, and like there's a lot of crossover friendships between LPGA and PGA Tour. I mean, like my best PGA Tour friend is Andre Gonzalez. Like that's my homie. Like that, but that's like where I'm, you know, we're pals and like whatever. But I think if like I ever like were to see Tiger Woods, I would like, and like come close enough to talk to him, I'd probably have a mental breakdown.
I need to have you interview Jordan Spieth. That's what I
need.
That
would be fun.
I need you just to sit down and ask him all the questions about his golf game.
I would love to.
After your win last year, and again, I mean, if people haven't watched your press conference or read through it, it's excellent. I mean, you were very open and honest, as anybody that knows you would expect you to be. But you said, I'm not sure I can win out here again. You said that was something that really went through your brain. I think a lot of players struggle with this. When you're thinking that way, again, I mean, I know that you're not probably thinking it shot to shot, but when you're in that moment and you're in contention in a tournament, how are you able to kind of block the thought out that I am not sure I was going to be here again, or how do I even close this thing out since it's been 4 years? How are you keeping those things at bay?
I think because I was like fortunate enough to have that one win where I was like, okay, I'm not like trying to get that first win where I still feel like that monkey's on my back of like, is that ever going to happen? What's going to happen? So I tried to just pull from that experience of being like, okay, like you've done this before. So let's try and do as much as we can to get into that like good mindset, you know, the good vibes, good feeling. It like, for me, it's just kind of like a frame of mind of how do I keep myself as calm as I can, because I am I can get pretty anxious and I have a lot of energy. Like it may not be visible to people watching, and I'm sure there are a lot of players that say the same thing, but internally it's like wheels are spinning, lots of thoughts are going on, you know, how do we manage to get through the next hour and a half without just like totally like spinning off into la la land of just too much bad stuff. So I think it's just, and some of it's timing and luck, and it's just like, okay, how am I swinging this week? What are my swing thoughts? What are my keys? Like, are they consistent? Am I sticking with them? Are they working? You know, like I think when the process is really working, you are in that element and you can perform and you can do it. And you have a lot of times that does work, and it may not even result in a win. Like, let's say just someone outplays you, right? Which is normal. It happens. But I think when you have that perspective of like, I did this the right way, the best way, and you try and build off of that and just try to get there every single time. And sometimes that'll result in being good enough, and sometimes it might not be, but I don't think you can look at it as like taking a loss as much as just getting outplayed.
What was the moment that you went from solid amateur golfer, collegiate golfer to I'm going to give it a run? Cause I mean, I think you qualified for the US Open at 19. Is that right?
I did. That was a little like, I was in way over my head. I got to Saucon Valley and I was like, oh, wow. Holy crap.
Did you nerd out like, that week?
Was
that
a
week?
Did. Oh, yeah, that was good. A bad week. Good, I was good, like, good. I shouldn't be here. I should be watching this on TV, but here I am. And, you know, I was at Vandy and Greg Allen was my coach. And
my man.
Yeah. And he had a relationship with Lorena from when he was at Arizona. So he's like, why don't we set up a practice round with Lorena? And I was like, okay, great. And then it happened and I was like, whoa, this is just like wild, you know? Yeah, it was a definitely a learning experience. My first US Open as an amateur, it was cool. But no, I think I shot like 80-80 and that was the rest of his history on that. But
it's what 19-year-olds should shoot in US Open, to be fair.
No,
to be
fair. Well, today I look at these girls and they're just
incredible.
Like, oh, I have 6-iron and I'm gonna hit 190. I'm like, what is this?
Those are the moments you feel old. Those
I'm
are the
like,
old
where's
moments.
Where's my 5-wood? I'll
that's right.
A
that's
little
right.
Fade
a cutty
in there.
One. I had a little cutty 5-wood. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, but I think like my sophomore year got really consistent at Vandy, and then I was like, okay, this may be a legit career opportunity.
Did you feel that as a junior golfer? Like, did you feel like you?
I don't know. Growing up in New Jersey and playing junior golf, it was really cool, and I definitely don't think I would trade that. Looking back on it, you know, I played. A lot of crazy weather, cold, rain, snow. I played on the boys golf team, which was a lot of fun. It was just like a very unorthodox like route to college golf, but I think there were a lot of great learning experiences. But there was no way for me to have any sense of like my skill sets until I got to school to college.
We both lost golf bags in 2022.
I was yours going, was like a month, no?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I got it back because the person found it at the freaking airport in Scotland, which is so weird.
Insane.
I'm a schmuck that like hopes to play some golf on the road when I'm working.
Yeah,
you have to play it for
a
living. What is it like when you're standing at the carousel at the airport and your sticks don't come out for tournament weeks?
Yeah, I've been really lucky that hasn't really happened to the point where it's been multiple days. Luckily this was the back end of coming back from Australia and I was pretty much in off season. So I'm like, I just hope they return to me at some point.
I want to see them at some point, right?
At some point. Cause I was like, I really don't want to replace all of these clubs, but, it's the worst feeling. You're just like, they're gone forever and ever. Depends on the scenario. Like internationally, like when you're traveling internationally, you feel like they could never, ever come back. Like that is a very real fear of like, they're gone. Someone's going to sell them. They're going to take my putter and my driver, my new TSR3, and they're going to be like, I'm going to go out and just roast this thing.
Was that a Titleist plug in
that
the podcast? I'm very impressed by that. Way
Thanks.
To go. You see, listen, this is why everybody should sponsor Marina. She knows exactly how to play the game. Very well done. Would you want to do media? I mean, I feel like you'd be so excellent at it.
Maybe. I've thought about it. It's crossed my mind. I would love a few more opportunities to, you know, do what you do and get on the other side of it. I think because I really watch a lot of golf and I enjoy shot making and like how to play and like all the different ways to play. I feel like, however, I know that on course is really, really difficult. And as I've talked to some people and I understand like it's hard, but I think I could have some little aptitude for it. I don't know. It would be fun to give it a whirl in a very risk-free setting at some point or another.
It's always when you beg for like the lowest rated event. My first college basketball play-by-play game, I was like, where is this going to be on television? And they were like, FS2. And I was like, perfect. That is the best case scenario. Don't put it on Fox. Don't put it on FS1. I want it where nobody's really watching. That's the key. That's where I want to land. I mentioned Twitter earlier. How's your relationship with Twitter these days? Are you into it? Are you out on it? Are you dipping in and in?
I'm in and out. This whole Elon Musk thing is like relatively entertaining. I kind of just see what's going on and he's just like, I don't even know. I don't know how he tweets as often as he does and like works.
He has to have meetings. He's got to have so many meetings. Like,
I'm like, where's this guy?
Got
to
be tweeting in his meetings.
He has to be.
It's like when you're doing a Zoom with somebody and you know they're on their phone and you're like, you're not listening to me.
So I still haven't decided. It's like, is it necessary to pay this $8 for verification? I haven't either.
Yeah,
I'm hoping I don't lose my blue check mark.
Also, it's hilarious. This is the thing my wife and I talk a lot about. We're like, we get really, really up in arms about $8. And then it's like, I just ordered Uber Eats like 3 days in a row. And you're like, I think I can handle the $8 hit.
So I actually, this is like a little tangent, but I signed up for this DoorDash Pass, which is like a membership to DoorDash.
Nice.
And they slash a lot of like your fees as you go along, you know, for deliveries and service. So I almost got like a Spotify recap from DoorDash.
Oh no.
It was like, you have saved like $875
You're like, this isn't a good thing. This just, like, now, well, I know how much I spent.
I guess my $99 a year buy-in was worth it because I saved $890 on extra service and delivery fees. And I'm like, that's sad. It's pathetic. But
hey, when you're on the road, let's say, when do you get to a tournament? You get there Monday?
Yeah, Sunday or Monday, depending on the length of travel to get where we need to go.
All right, let's call it you get there Monday.
Sure.
Obviously, you're leaving sometime Sunday or Monday morning.
Yeah.
Let's break down your dinner situation. So how many dinners are you ordering in? How many dinners are you going out for?
It depends entirely on where I'm staying. If it's a hotel, you know, it's 100% of either, like, I'm probably ordering it in and maybe going out twice. If I'm in a house, I will grocery shop and I will cook probably 75% of the week. And then it's usually like either Friday or Saturday that everyone's tired and the week's been long and you're like, no, we're not doing the whole kitchen cooking deal. And then you just grab something, you know, takeaway or whatever. But no, I love renting because I actually do enjoy cooking, and it allows me to actually be a little bit healthier. You know, eating out every meal is just really rough.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that the Postmates, Uber Eats, like DoorDash thing has become such a thing. I will share an embarrassing thing I do on the road, since you shared an embarrassing part about your life.
Yeah.
I now, if I've had a long day of work and I just don't want to see anybody, I will now order Postmates or Uber Eats. And then I will call down to the front desk and I'll say, if somebody brings it up for me, because, you know, they won't let you take let the delivery person take the elevator. So I'm like, if somebody down there brings it up, I will give them $5 cash. Like, perfect. That'll be a tip. And then I could just avoid small talk out. You know, what are you doing tonight?
Nothing.
I'm in pajamas. Like, I just want to go to bed. I'm in sweats. Let's all leave each other alone. That just, now I don't have to even worry about it.
I love that move.
Are you going to adopt this? Are you going to adopt this this year?
I might adopt this.
You can use it. You can use it.
I will shout out when I do this.
Please do. Can we talk about society for a little bit?
Oh, okay. Let's go there.
You want to talk about society?
Okay.
How has it been being someone that has kind of seen their, let's call it your Q rating? Let's see it continually go up over the last few years. And at the time, a lot of this stuff is changing and our world is changing. How much do you feel like you have a responsibility to say stuff about things that matter to you and that matter to the world and you feel like are important to talk about? And like, how much is that responsibility? Do you feel like it weighs you too much and you might not want to touch a certain subject because you feel like it'll bring on so much of the other stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's not the easiest answer, because I think everyone has feelings on things. And, you know, you can't really judge a person for, you know, how they feel about something, because not everyone's opinions are going to be in line with one another. And that's like the part of who we are as people. And that's why, you know, we have preferences on anything. But it's to a point now where everyone is just terrified to say anything at all, really. So I think it stifles the growth element of not even being able to have constructive conversations. I just wish that we could, you know, I wish that it didn't go to hate town all the time.
Totally.
And that's like, Twitter is toxic like that more than anything, you know, and I know from my own experience of stirring a pot, knowing that I'm going to, but if you deep dive into some of the comments, you're just like, wow, where is that hate coming from? Like, why? It's upsetting, you know, and there are some things where I just can't help it. You know, I feel so strongly. I'm like, I'm going to take it on and then know that I'm going to get probably more hate than I am going to get, you know, positive reception from it. But if you know that going into it, you know, you kind of can shield yourself a little bit to what's expected. But, you know, there are some things, it's like, if it's true to your character and you want to speak about it, I think you do yourself a disservice not. And everyone, really. It's just, you have to sift through all of that crap that people are going to give you for whatever you want to say.
Have you ever sent a tweet and then deleted the app right after so you didn't have to even look at it? Yeah, that's the best.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best feeling in the world. I don't even need to see the hate.
3 days and then, like, it'll be over with.
come back my way on Wednesday, baby. I'm out. I've
done that several times, actually.
That's a big move of mine. I'm a big fan of that.
I have no shame in it either.
I don't either.
I'll come back. I'll, like, it'll be like 1,000 notifications, and I'm just like, whatever.
It's fine. I don't need to see any of them. I'll just we're past it. We're past it. It's like a bad beat in sports. You're like, just don't check your gambling account for like 3 days, and we'll get back to it. You know, it's very interesting talking to a player on the LPGA, because the last year in terms of golf conversation, it's been entirely about money, and the money talk has been male golf. Now, I mean, I know purses have increased on the LPGA and a lot of the major championships, and that's worth praising, but so much of the conversation in 22 was about money. What was it like as an LPGA player week to week, knowing that was so much of the conversation? What was it like in your circles and your conversations about it?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, they make so much money, and that's great. I mean, it is. I'm hoping one day that we're going to be making close to that amount of money, but it kind of got laughable, if I'm being honest, when we have, like, you know, PGA Tour Live, and like everyone's griping about like all this stuff, and we joke out here and we're like, imagine if, like, they have no idea.
I mean, like, when some of the players were talking about, like, I want to do this for my family. And you're like, yeah, but, you know, you win the tournament, like, you make like $2.5 million. Like, we got a purse finally to that number, you know, this year. Yeah, it's just so wild.
Yeah, it honestly is. It's not even a point that it's frustrating for us, because it is improving. We're going to get there. I have faith that it's going to get there. I think we just laugh at like their perceptions, and sometimes they're like, what is reality is a little bit skewed, and that's okay. They don't know any different, really, because they're playing for big bucks, and they're now playing for even bigger bucks. So it's you can get lost in the perspective sauce, is what I like to say.
Nice.
But yeah, you know, we kind of joke. We're like, haha, these guys.
I mean, is that how it was perceived this past year, where it was like, we can't do anything else but laugh?
No, we're not going to do anything about it. Like, to start like stirring again, like pots of money talk and all that, is just not even worth going down that route. You know, I think the best thing that has happened, I think, for us, it's like, let's focus on our product, the LPGA. Like, how are we going to get better? Is there investment opportunity because of, unfortunately, the divide that's going on in men's golf? Like, how can we take advantage of this situation? Like, maybe there are new sponsors that are going to come our way because they want to do something different than, you know, what is happening in men's golf. You know, there are different ways to look at it, where it's like, okay, maybe we can benefit from this in some way, not necessarily monetarily speaking immediately, but it might just change people's perspectives. It might make them want to tune in to watch women's golf a little bit more, because maybe they just don't like, you know, all of the rhetoric that's going on in men's golf. Like, I don't know, you know, it's hard to look at it and not try and find some little bit of how can we weasel our way in there and use it to our advantage.
Silver lining somewhere in there is they're making millions upon millions upon millions upon millions more dollars. It's just keep saying millions. You just keep saying it over and over again.
I'm like, maybe we'll get a couple of those millions somehow, some way.
Have you felt the popularity of the LPGA grow, like, internally with yourself and over the last years?
I think so. And I think we've had some really good star power in the last, you know, 3 or 4 seasons, you know, with Nelly, with Danielle, with Jess, Lexi, Jin Young, you know, all of these. Lydia is playing phenomenal golf. Minji, you know, it's just, I feel like we have a little bit more of, like, people recognize these players now individually. And I think that's a huge deal for us as far as growing a fan base and people wanting to tune back in. It's like, oh, I know who that player is, you know, as opposed to just not really having a clue. So that really helps kind of retain viewership for women's golf.
Which player floored you in person playing with them?
In the course of my entire career?
Sure.
It's a good question. I will say the times that, like, and she's not really playing anymore, Yanni was probably one of the most unbelievable ball strikers on a female golfer that I've ever seen. Just, I mean, the compression, the long irons, the driver, it's incredible. It's sad that she's really not playing much anymore, because I still think she would be like an unbelievable draw. And I mean, Michelle Louie is a great friend of mine, and I mean, we're the same age, but like, her life trajectory is just so different, you know, like where she was at like 15 and 16 is like unbelievable when you think about it relative to like any other 15 or 16 year old.
Ever.
But, you know, I when I play with her, there still see some of those shots that she can hit and the short game and everything. It's like, there's just some special talent out there. And I do think Nelly is also one of those players that
she's
just
got
like
it.
She's got it. And Lydia has a short game that like I've never seen on anyone. So there are some really cool things if you get an opportunity to watch it.
So you're at a hotel room. It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're opening DoorDash. You're going to lean on, obviously, you know, your elite status there.
Yes.
What are we looking for first? Like what's number one hope the restaurant's available in this town?
You know, that's a good question. It's usually something like Thai is like a usual, okay, like safe go-to, where I'm just like, okay, let me try this out. If it's good, I'll probably order it again, like later in the week, kind of test the waters.
Zoe's Kitchen is a big one for me. Yeah. Chipotle always kind of lean on that.
Yeah. I'm kind of grown out of the Chipotle. It's like, you can only have it so many times. So I'm like, okay, I need to find something new.
See, you are maturing. You are maturing and getting older.
Blaze Pizza is a good one.
Oh, like, what a great call.
Yeah, that's a solid one. I know what I'm getting and I can just do what I want and I can do something different every time, which is great. So
goals for 23. Do you write them down? Do you have them in your head? Do you do that kind of stuff?
No, it's funny. I was talking about this recently and I think like physical health is like a huge goal at this point, you know, just staying healthy, feeling like physically fit and play. Like every week that I step out there, I want to feel as close to 100% as I can. I think that's a huge goal, just results aside. I think results will come if I feel like I'm in like a good mental and physical place to go out and play and I'm not distracted by other things. I really would love to have some better results in majors. Like I would love to just stay in that hunt a little bit longer than I have at any point in my career. So I think those are definitely some things I'm looking forward to. We have great venues and it's just going to be, it's going to be really exciting. So I would love some game to show up for that.
The venue improvement has been like the coolest part over the last couple of years, in my opinion, of golf. Like the LPGA majors have just, they just taken it to another level.
And I'm going to do a shameless plug again. That PGA of America, KPMG, they really put that forward. You know, we're going back now at like since 2015, right? You know, when we started playing Westchester and that's like at the beginning stages of how long I've been on tour, they really moved the needle on all of that for the USGA and the RNA to step up and be like, we need to provide better venues for these major championships. And they have been, and it's been great. And obviously the purse increases and all of that have followed suit, but it starts with a course. You know, you get a great course and people want to watch and then you can spend more money and make more money. So it's, I really think that pursuit of better venues by PGA of America has helped us tremendously.
A lot of people ask who your dream foursome would be. I want your nervous foursome. So you're playing golf, like you were talking about earlier, like running across a PGA Tour player, or maybe a famous athlete. Who do you think if you were going to play golf with three notable people, who would be the most nervous you'd be in a foursome? Who do you think that three would be?
Tiger for sure.
Okay.
Maybe Rory, even though he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. I think it'd be intimidating to just like watch the tee shot on one.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wow.
Same. I know.
340 down the middle. Cool, man. I always feel like I'd be really nervous to play with Obama because I'd really want to make him laugh early on. And if I didn't get any chuckles early on, I feel like I would just be trying to go to the well way too often.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't even think outside of golf. I'm strictly just thinking like other golfers.
So we got Tiger and Rory. Who do you think's third? Is it Spieth?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
I feel like he's just like too like normal. Relatably normal, even though he isn't. Where you'd probably end up riding in a cart with him or something, you know, and you'd be like, this is cool.
Maybe Rom? I don't know.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he seems like a sneaky, like a little intimidating. I don't know these guys.
This might be a new game we play on the podcast from now on. What foursome would make you the most nervous? This is how we're going to go about it. Before we let you go, who's going to win the Super Bowl? Give me your Super Bowl matchup, maybe.
I mean, I would love to see the Bills win the Super Bowl. Okay. Even before everything that has just happened with DeMar, they're a fan base that just desperately deserves a Super Bowl championship at this point. So that's like always who I would want to win. But I mean, I love Joe Burrow. I think the Bengals are awesome, and I think they've got a really they have a good team, and they can do it. And I sneaky like you can't rule out Tom Brady. So I don't think they'll win the Super Bowl, but I think they're gonna make a little run here.
I think the year they won the Super Bowl at Tampa Bay, I remember I bet against them in the, I guess it would have been the NFC Championship game.
Well, when they played against, they played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl
right,
that year.
Right,
did they not? Yeah.
I don't even remember who they played in the NFC Championship game, but it might have been the Packers maybe. And I remember I bet,
you're right.
Against them.
Yeah, for
and I was
Rogers
like,
to beat,
what
yeah.
the hell was I doing? Wow. This guy's Tom Brady. So I promise you, I will not be putting any money on the Dallas Cowboys
because,
in this game?
No, because they can totally dust the Cowboys. Like, they
yes.
can. I mean, the Cowboys are so not consistent enough to even put any money on that. And then I don't even know who their matchup would be after. Would it be, like, the winner of the 49ers?
I think it's Eagles if they win. I think if they beat Dallas, they get the Eagles,
get
I
the
believe.
Eagles. Okay. So. Who knows?
They could win that. By the way, we're now carving out a path for Tom Brady to win another Super Bowl. Awesome.
I'm happy with it.
Just what the world needs is more Brady rings. Marina, I appreciate it. Anything you
Good
have?
Shame.
Any question you have for me? Anything you got? Anything you want to ask?
What's your hat of the day today?
This is Boston Golf Club.
Nice. Love
Can you
it.
See it? But one
yeah.
of the best modern logos.
I like
one
that.
Of the best
it's
modern
great.
Logos out there. I love. Yeah. I love this logo and love this golf course. Shout out to Gil.
Are you going to come to the U.S. Open at Pebble?
Yes, I will be at the
Sweet.
U.S. Open at Pebble.
Awesome.
I hope you win the U.S. Open at Pebble.
I hope so, too. That would
that'd
be
really
absolutely
cool.
Sick. Yeah.
Hey, what would you – here's my question. I've always wondered this. And this is it's Pebble specific.
Okay. Mind you, I've never played there. So.
Okay. So you know. I mean, you know the golf course. Like
yes.
18 ocean on
Lots
the left.
Lots of Tiger Woods golf.
Out of bounds on the right?
Yeah.
What does the lead have to be for you to feel comfortable hitting driver off the tee on 18? Like,
five.
You're a pro golfer, but like, I just feel like I'd go Phil's route of hitting 4-iron like he did in the Pro-Am that one year. Like,
yeah.
Is it 5-shot lead? You feel comfortable hitting driver?
I think 5, yeah.
Okay. So then you can hit 2 in the ocean and still yeah. make like 7 or 8 and win. This
yeah.
is, by the way, this is why I didn't make it as a golfer. This is why this exact conversation.
The fact that I'm entertaining this conversation doesn't say much about me either.
Listen, it's a long way from now. We got a long way. I would not ask you this question the week before the U.S. Open. I promise you that.
Thanks.
But when you win it by 5, we'll bring this back on the socials. Where can people follow you and all that good stuff?
Instagram. At Marina with multiple A's and several D's, Marina D, and then Twitter, and that's all I do.
Just Twitter and Instagram.
Just Twitter and Instagram. I have no idea what a TikTok even is.
I have the app on my phone. Never created an account. My agent tells me to create one every week. I never do it, and he'll probably yell at me about saying this on the podcast.
I do have a Facebook fan page that I run with one of my sponsors that people can follow me there, but it's not as it's not as interactive as like Instagram or Twitter is the most interactive because if it comes down to it, I will probably direct reply to some people depending on the topic of conversation.
Unbelievable. The world we live in. You can respond to the 40th ranked person on the planet Earth at a craft and they'll go, let me DM you back,
DM you back.
A-hole. Yep, that's exactly right. Mostly if you are being an asshole is when you will get the
pretty
reply.
Much.
Awesome. Great. Have a great year. Thanks for this.
Thanks,
we'll do
Shane.
It again later in the season.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed Marina Alex. One of my favorite people in professional golf in general, player, broadcaster, media member, anything. She's very fun, entertaining, and I hope you guys got exactly why out of that interview. Now it's time for a little different, I'd say right turn, left turn, whatever you want to say. We're going to go to Rusty Reynolds. This is a friend of mine. We've been best friends since we were kids. He got married this year. I was his best man. It was a big honor of mine to be involved in any capacity with his wedding. To be called best man of that guy was something I will hold with me for a long time. And he's a buddy of mine that comes on our yearly golf trip, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But you know what? It's my big golf trip of the year. It's the one I get the most excited for. And damn it, this is my podcast, and we're going to spend 10, 15 minutes talking about 16 idiots going to Southern Arizona and playing golf for a few days. So that is what's next. To wrap up the podcast today, and for the first time in many a years, I've had a podcast since 2016, which is kind of wild to think, and I've never had my best buddy Rusty Reynolds on the podcast. that is changing right now. Rusty Reynolds, welcome to the Get a Grip podcast. Have you ever done a podcast before?
Never, never, ever have done a podcast.
Last time you were involved in media, when do you think that was?
I would have to say probably back in 2014 during March Madness when I cussed on TV.
It was on some local news network in Phoenix. We'd been at a bar for just way too long, and they wanted to interview people, and Rusty was one of the people they picked. And so Rusty and I go way back, been buddies since we were little kids, and we just completed our sixth trip to Tubac or Tubac, Arizona, depending on how you pronounce it. We go to the resort there. Like I said, we've been doing it for 6 years. The first time we did it, what was that, 2018, we had 10 of us. And now we go with 16, and we play 8-on-8. Actually, our team, Rusty, we're on the same team. Our team won for the first time this year, which was very exciting. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, you know, thinking about the trip, because you were on the first one as well back in 2018. It's our favorite week of the year. Everybody talks about it. We get very excited about it. I overdo the merch. Why is it so special to you?
Man, so I got invited out to this in 2018, and I mean, it was with several of your buddies that I didn't even know. And man, it's the only time that I get to see a lot of them. And it's just a great time. It's a great hang. I mean, it's good golf. I mean, we've never had bad weather.
I know. We've been so lucky. Don't jinx it now. Gosh.
It's just, man, it's just so good. It's to be around people that you don't get to see very often. And then the fact that you get to throw golf in there. And honestly, man, it's all great dudes.
27 holes at the resort. We kind of split it up. One of them is a little bit tougher. That's where they filmed a lot of the like early scenes of Ten Cup, the movie. They've got signs and movie posters and stuff all around the resort. And it's awesome. But you said it. And as we get older, I mean, you just turned 39. I'm 39. You've got a baby on the way in like 2 weeks. So just got the trip in, baby. We just got it in.
Yes.
You just got married late last year. I mean, a lot of life happening. And as we get older, I think one of the reasons that the trip's so special is when you're younger and the responsibilities are minimal, it's not hard to get together. I mean, that's something that you do when you're in your 20s and early 30s is you get together a lot. You go watch football on Sundays and you might meet up on Thursday nights. And like you used to play softball all the time. And, you know, I'm playing competitive golf here and there and playing pickup hoops. And as you get older and, you know, you get married and you start having kids, the idea and thought of that is not so easy. And the fact that there's 16 guys that are as jazzed to go to a place as, you know, anybody else in the group, I think you nailed it when you said that's one of the special parts is the fact that we get to all hang out and pick up right where we left off and enjoy each other's company and basically play golf sun up to sun down in a relatively competitive format. And it's, you know, you can't wait to get back out there the next day. I mean, I think it's funny too, Rusty. It's changed from going to Tubac and partying with golf involved to now going down there and golf is the first part of it with the partying kind of second and third.
100%, man. Dude, we were talking about it this past weekend. And, you know, first year we go down there, we're staying up till 1-2 o'clock in the morning, maybe having some beers or two, you know, playing dice, playing cards. And there was not one time this past weekend, everybody wasn't in the rooms past 11:30.
We didn't make it till the next day ever. Like nobody saw 12:01, right? I mean, that was not a thing that happened.
Not one.
Do you have a highlight from this trip in particular? Did you have a moment that you'll remember from like 23 that maybe adds into the catalog of the Tubac trips in the past?
You know, actually, there's probably two. One of them is both came on Saturday playing the singles match against Ashton, who's their number one. And, you know, people don't know he's a plus handicap or a scratch. And I'm an 8 handicap. And I was down 3 through 10. And I came all the way back and make birdie on number 18 to think like a 20-footer for birdie to close it and win 2 up.
Yeah, so. Well, hold on. Now, before you get to the birdie putt you made, because the hole you're talking about, it's a par 3. It's an island green. From the back tees, it's, you know, a 9-iron or a wedge. From the tees you were playing, it was probably 130 yards. But can you tell what happened on the green prior, which, again, kind of plays into the competition side of things and the fun of going against a buddy?
Yeah. So hole 16, I go one shot up. So we get to 17 and I'm getting a shot and I'm in for a five and
five for four.
Ashton's putting for birdie, runs it by like four and a half feet. So he's got this 4.5 footer to come back for par. If he misses it, matches over. And I tell him, say, hey man, go ahead and pick it up. You're good. He looked at me. He was like, what? I said, man, I want this last hole to count for something.
And then what'd you do? And then you make a two. And then you make like a 30 footer and yell so loud everybody at the bar heard you, which was very apropos of the week.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't want to repeat what I yelled on this thing because it yelled and it was a great time.
I mean, what was the second moment?
Second moment had to be when me and you when me and you get to play in two other buddies, me and Austin Sneds, and we're scrambling and we go to shoot 8 under through 9. And it crazy enough, we didn't even kill them. They weren't.
I know. Yeah. I mean, so our buddies, you mentioned them, Minos and Sneds. I mean, you know, 15 to 18 handicaps. We were playing match play, two man scramble. They were playing tees up in front of us. And they were getting a shot a hole, which I would say going into that match, I would have probably handicapped that incorrectly. I would have said we were relatively heavy favorites. I was talking to our buddy Greenberg on the phone yesterday, kind of explaining to him what went down with that. And before I even told him how the match ended up, he goes, I'm not sure there's a big heavy favorite in that match, right? And yeah, we shot 8 under and won the match. You made a long putt on the last to win us a little bit of dough. But I would say a good piece of advice for anybody doing a big guys trip, and we do this, and I think it's one of the great parts of the trip, is the competition side of the entire trip ends at lunch on Saturday. And so the afternoon of Saturday is go out with whoever you want, no matter what team you're on, play whatever match you want to play. Don't play golf, ride around in the cart, drink. You know, whatever you feel like doing Saturday afternoon is yours. And a lot of people say it's their favorite part of the trip is that relaxed atmosphere of Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. You get to get a couple of guys who are going against each other. Some of them team up to be on the same team. Cause I think there's a couple of them that, they've had the same match going on Saturday afternoons for the last 4 years now. So, and keep going after it.
So Rusty, you and I had a good week. I mean, our team won, you know, we got the winning head covers. First time that our team has won, whatever you want to call it, the Tubac Cup or whatever. You were talking a lot of trash going into the week. You continue to talk a lot of trash throughout the week. And then when the matches end, how will the Rusty Reynolds trash talking continue over the next 11 months?
Well, you know, I just want to make sure these guys know that, we are some woodcutters. We just like to chop down trees for Team Woods, and you know, I mean, sorry about their bad luck.
Yep, that's unfortunate. Awesome. Well, I think it was a good recap. I mean, I think your first podcast appearance, I think you nailed it. You didn't ever turn your camera on, so I could never see your face, but that's okay. I just spent, you know, 5 days with you, and I saw a lot of you. I slept in the same room with you. Heard all the noises that we all make, but. I mean, you know, it's crazy. Like, we talk about Tubac a lot. My wife was rolling her eyes the other day because I was already talking about merch that I want to get ready for next year when we're, you know, a year away from it. I was thinking about it in terms of children, Rusty, and this is where it's going to be weird for you. But, you know, at Tubac last year, Charlotte was not born, you know, and I mean, now she's crawling around and pulling herself up, and your baby to be born in 2-3 weeks will be nearly a year old at Tubac next year. And I mean, when you think about it in terms of that, it is so wild because a year is a long time, even though it doesn't feel like a long time. But we already are starting to get the text messages on the countdowns to Tubac 24. So very excited.
Absolutely. Shout out to Kowalski, who just kills it for creating us a countdown and updates us every about 3 to 4 weeks early in the year.
It has to be soon. It's got to be. It has to be a weekly thing. You think it's every 3 weeks?
I think it's every 3 to 4 in the
on
first
average.
Part of the year.
I got you.
Then when it gets when we get into about the under 90 days, under 100 days, that stuff comes quick.
Every couple of days, I agree with you. And there are rumors, Rusty. I've seen rumors online. I've got text about it, but there's a rumor that you and I might have to team up again this year. So down the road, yeah, we'll see if there's other golf matches we can maybe go out and try to win.
Hey, down to do it.
That is the famous Rusty Reynolds, the one and only Rusty Reynolds. And a big congrats to Rusty. As I said, they've got a baby on the way in the next couple of weeks. So that's going to be very, very exciting. Thanks for jumping on, buddy.
Man, thanks. Have a good one.
All righty. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Big thanks to Marina for taking the time. Good luck to her in 2023. And of course, shout out to Mr. Rusty Reynolds. I will post a Instagram story, if you're listening to this on Friday, of Rusty. You've probably seen him on my feed over the years, but if not, I will post an image on the Instagram so that you have an idea of who you just listened to. Thank you so much for the support as always. Make sure you're following me on social media at Shane Bacon. That's on Twitter. That's on Instagram. And we will be back next week with many more episodes and excited for 2023.